Welcome, Guardians, to episode 281 of Destiny Massive Breakdowns. As always, I am your host, Kid Kutcha, and I am here today with a longtime friend of the show, someone I've been a fan of for ages. Now this year, fellow podcast host, and kind of hitting the big time recently, getting some press, getting some justifiable recognition for contributions to the community. I'd like to welcome Court back to the show. How you doing?
Not bad, Kit. Not bad. Yes, I have been getting the big focus from a lot of content creators, and I can only thank all of those guys. You know, Fallout Plays is one big example. I want to shout it out on our most recent podcast episode, and I'll shout him out here as well. Just having me up on his one of his latest videos, just talking about damage stacking. You know, people call me the expert. If I have that impression, then fair enough, I'll take that position. But yeah, I'm doing well, doing good. Lots of things happening over the last week or so in the Massive Breakdowns network, as Kit and I have been talking in the background with
yes.
our fellow hosts over on Podcast Versus Enemies.
Yeah, big news coming in here. So last week I opened up Twitter, as I do far too often, trying to work on that, failing mostly. But I was glad I did, because I saw I had an unread. And it was an unread from Bungie, which is always like super exciting to see in the old inbox. So we had a contact reaching out to see about setting up a little something, not for this show, not for Destiny Massive Breakdowns, as we've been graced a number of times in the past to have some really, really fun, really enjoyable interviews. But they've talked a lot to the community about PvP stuff. And I got to say, it's about time. They were asking specifically about PvE. And I had to clarify real quick that they weren't wanting me to talk about it, because I was just like, oh boy, I'm going to need some help here. You know, I'm competent in PvE, but I'm by no means an expert. And fortunately, they actually meant Podcast Versus Enemies, and not just the PvE sandbox. So I was super excited to let you guys know you did it. You got their attention. So congratulations. Go ahead and share the details with folks here.
Yes.
Who are we talking to, and what are we talking about?
Yes, so we, Podcast Versus Enemies, will be featuring two Bungie developers from the weapons department, as Kit was saying there. We will be hosting Vivian Bex and Chris Proctor. Chris Proctor's the seasoned veteran for Destiny Community Podcasts at this point. We are super excited to have him on, of course, but to feature Vivian Bex on as a first timer, give her a little bit of a platform. She mentioned that she's more so on the side of elemental sandbox perks. So we have fielded a few questions related to them, stuff like how does incandescent and volt shot, how do they work in combination with subclasses, in combination with damage perks, all that sort of stuff. We are really super excited. Saint, Impetus, and I are just truly hyped. And I think speedrunning podcast, getting a developer on. What's that, episode 38? We'll have them on. I'm playing a little bit of mind gymnastics here, because I'm recording this podcast this week. Then shortly after this episode is being recorded, I'll be recording that episode with the developers. But this episode will be going out before the developer podcast. So I'm playing a bit of 5D chess with the trying to remember what's coming up and what isn't.
So just to set folks straight, of course, this episode is releasing on October 29th. And the interview with Vivian Bex and Chris Proctor from Bungie will be releasing on November the 2nd. So I'm going to be, you know, setting that date in stone so folks know when to expect it. And we'll make sure, I know you guys are doing a bunch of work behind the scenes to make sure we've got all of the info out there in a digestible format for everybody, both the audio as well as some official notes containing all the most salient points with the appropriate context to hopefully avoid any miscommunications or misunderstandings. But yeah, very excited. I cannot wait to listen in to this one. I'm very excited for Vivian's freshman appearance on a Destiny podcast. I have no doubt she's going to be delivering some very exciting content, talking about elemental philosophy with weapons, especially as we are counting down the days to Lightfall, even this far out. Gotta keep counting them down, with a new element being added to the sandbox. You know, we have to think that the info she's going to share here is perhaps going to help us in terms of what types of things we might look forward to or expect to see. You know, we obviously know nothing about Strand beyond the name and the appearance and the zipline, or you know, the bullwhip or whatever you want to call it, where the Spider-Man ability. We've got precious few details here, and so getting I think about kind of an into the mind peek into the thinking and the philosophy that goes into planning for these abilities from the weapon side of things is going to be really interesting. And we'll get to see that play out in real time, you know, as Lightfall comes out next year. So,
yeah,
and Chris, of course, always a delight to talk to you. I'm so excited for you guys to hang out with him.
I think just to really highlight the what Vivian's going to be at least like highlighting from Bungie's point of view is that the elemental sandbox perks. I know it doesn't make too much of a big difference in PvP. You know, when's other than maybe say Headstone or Volt Shot, where you might not be as procking them as much, but in the PvE environment, in that side of the sandbox, I think Impetus Saint and I, we've talked about how that's allowed a nice fresh air into the perk sandbox on weapons.
Yeah.
And it's just opened up this Pandora's box of what can they do for Void, Arc, Solar, Stasis, and then of course Strand coming up. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from Vivian and Chris Proctor as well. We will be just talking about a few, potentially some sub features that he's created. I know Origin Traits and Adept Weapons, they've been on the Bungie's kind of top list in terms of discussion points. So I do want to hear from Chris related to those topics. But yeah, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, very exciting. Very, very exciting. And I know we'll, you know, on that episode, you'll be able to share some info for folks about like the specific things they've worked on in the game that we're not going to spoil here, you know. But so if there are some perks that you love and you want to, you know, share that love with the folks that made them, you're going to want to tune into this one. All right. This is a great moment here, I think, to just stop and say thanks to some of the Guardians who are making these opportunities possible. Because none of this would be happening without the continued support of our listeners like you, speaking into your ear directly right now. You personally are responsible for making this happen for us, for making these developer interviews possible, for making each and every episode possible. So I want to go ahead and just say thank you to you for listening, and a special thank you to our patron and sponsor Guardians who give generously on a monthly or an annual basis to help support the show, to help cover the costs of any necessary equipment, software, pay for things like editing and hosting, important stuff where, you know, we're making sure that we're not just, you know, putting out a slipshod product here, but trying to put out something quality that you can really enjoy and learn from without being distracted by, you know, extraneous noises aside from the occasional cat. We don't mind Jesper so much.
It's not just Jasper.
Yeah, there's a few. There's a few.
There's a few cats in the massive breakdowns network.
I think it might be about. Maybe we'll finally have to add a pets channel to the Outer Rim in the Destiny Massive Breakdowns Discord, which I do want to encourage everyone listening to drop in to the Discord. It's a great place to hang out. It's always growing. Recently had a community PvP night organized by St. Kabir, which had a great turnout. And I'm sad I was not able to be there. I had a prior commitment, but I hear it was a ton of fun and that I did, in fact, miss out. So hopefully we'll have more of that going on in the future. With that said, I'd like to go ahead and say a quick thank you to new patrons. First up, Matchstick, welcome to the crew. Appreciate you. Hope to see you in the lounge in Discord. And second up, I'd like to welcome Pippin to the Massive Breakdowns patron crew through a special gift from fellow patron Bryce Aroni. We hadn't previously accepted gifting patronage simply because there's no direct way to do that through Patreon, which is unfortunate. Something I'll be reaching out to them to request in the future. But for now, that is something that, you know, I've set up a manual process to do that. So if that's something people feel the desire to do, they can just DM me. My DMs are always dangerously open to the public. So happy to hear from anybody who listens to the show for any reason. Finally, without further ado, a big shout out. Thank you. Appreciation to our sponsor Guardians who give on a truly massive level. Thank you to the Shazzle, Sylve, Geolocating Shark, Impetus, Starscream, Deacon, Askian Monk, Zen SoCal, Binary Wolf, Black Hammer Tech, and This Moment. I deeply appreciate all of you, as I do all of our ongoing patrons, everyone who's ever left a review for the show. Those 5-star reviews are just massively helpful. We won't be reading any reviews out this week, but if you'd like to hear your 5-star review read out on the podcast, all you have to do is leave one. If it's on Apple Podcasts, I will see it. If it's somewhere else, you're going to have to drop me a message with a screenshot, and I'll make sure it gets read. All right, with that said, let's dive into some stuff. Cort, I didn't bring you here just to listen to me talk. Thank goodness. I brought you here to talk about some weapons with me and to talk about some damage stacking, especially for folks in PvP who I think pay a little bit less attention to the rules for how damage buffs stack than the PvE-focused Guardians who maybe have to be a little more aware of those nuances. So we're gonna finish the show up with a crash course in damage stacking for the PvP main who might not be properly taking advantage of these in all aspects of the game. First up, we're going to talk about some world drops, and I'd like to go ahead and hand the mic over to you for a minute. I'd like to start, if we can, with one of my favorite, I'd say my second favorite of the world drops as a PvP player, and that's the Boudicca Sea, which I believe is a little bit overlooked.
Yes, to be honest, I've heard a lot of commentary about the Boudicca Sea. I'm obviously not a PvP player at large. I play a little bit of PvP, but when it comes to using weapons, sidearms aren't my necessarily go-to weapon. But I do keep hearing commentary about Boudicca Sea. So just to kind of tie us up at the top here, we'll just talk about Boudicca Sea itself. It is a precision frame. It's kinetic 260 RPM. So that's single firing. And just as a sort of side pivot related to the origin trait, which is Hacky Breach Armaments, something that Kit mentioned there about, you know, sometimes gloss over damage stacking, Hacky Breach Armaments does have a place in PvP. For Boudicca Sea itself, especially with its most recent changes in the mid-season update, all sidearms got their increased auto-aim fall-off distance by 30%. So previously, sidearms were the only primary weapon where auto-aim fell off significantly before damage, so this brings them up to other primary weapons. But when it comes to Hacky Breach armaments, this is related to emplacements. So there's a large kind of presence in PvE, but in PvP, this only really refers to Titan barricades, Warlock turrets, that's your healing, your stasis, the Warlock Well of Radiant Sword, really important highlight here, and stasis crystals. So Haki Breach Armaments gives you that 30% damage increase. When we have anti-barrier sidearm, which Bungie tends to give us every other season, that's another 30% damage increase. So that's
really 60. Like to make you use that sidearm to break barrier champs. That's just
but in PvP, 30% damage increase with the Haki Breach Armaments, that's a 69% damage increase versus barricades or the other things that I've listed, or against Bastion barricades, that's 103%. And then you can start pairing that with Whisper of Rending, which is 100% increase, and you're going to be one shotting crystals and maybe, you know, a couple shots for barricades and such. Just as a sort of, again, another side tangent here that I just wanted to highlight, seeing that as I am here on the PvP podcast.
Yeah.
Haki Breach Armaments doesn't affect Hunter's Tether Anchor, the Titan's Wards of Dawn Bubble, the Child of the Old Gods from Warlock, Warlocks, and all of these, including the ones that I did mention, that are affected by Haki Breach Armaments, are not affected by Vorpal Weapon. And just as a final note, heat rises. That's Warlocks consume their solar grenade and they start floating about. A lot of people have made this reference that they turn into, quote, vehicles, but that's not the case. They are not affected by Haki Breach Armaments. So yeah, that's the rabbit hole of Haki Breach Armaments there.
Those are some really good notes.
Yes.
For people, like I think I might have to go back and re-listen to this section and try to commit that to memory, because I don't always think about that. I mean, it's not going to stop me from shooting a child, which is just one of those Destiny things that out of context.
Yes, anyone listening to this and they're not familiar
super
with
disturbing. But I wanted to pause for just a moment and go back on my own little math tangent here, because there's something that you said that I think some folks are going to be confused by, and I wanted to go back to that. So this is really important to know when we're talking about stacking damage buffs on weapons. The vast majority of damage buffs, in fact, I can't think of any off the top of my head that this isn't true for, but I'm going to say the vast majority just to leave myself room in case there's one I'm forgetting right now. But they're typically multiplicative in the way that they stack. And so what that means is that you have two 30% damage buffs. Now, if you don't think about it, you might say, oh, okay, so it's a 60% damage buff, but that's not true. And that's not what you said it correctly, which I assumed that you would. It didn't even occur to me that you wouldn't, but this is why I want to go back to it. So the way that you figure these out as a guardian is you probably get a calculator out, you know, unless you're just happen to be quite good at multiplication. But so you would take the gun's base damage and you treat that as 100%, you know, so in a calculator, just put in a one. That's the simplest way to do this. Trying to multiply percentages is more work than it's worth. So you put in a one. That's the weapon's base damage. You're going to multiply that by your first damage buff. So we'll say Haki Breach Armaments. It's a 30% damage buff. So you multiply one by 1.3, which of course is 1.3, right? Easy. No one struggled with that. Very, very simple. Now it suddenly gets a little harder. You're adding on a second 30% damage buff, but you're not actually adding it. You're multiplying it. So it doesn't become 1.6. You can't skip this step. You have to multiply again. So you take 1.3 times 1.3, and that's where you get to 1.69 instead of 1.6. What this means is that when you can stack two or three damage buffs at a time, the result is greater than the sum of those parts, right? Because it's literally not a sum. It's multiplication. And so that's just kind of important to keep in mind. And that's where you can sometimes get crazy, you know, one-shot combos that, you know, you might miss if you aren't thinking about the fact that this stuff all gets multiplied together, except for the stuff that doesn't stack at all. But we'll come back to that later. All right. Back to I always say Boudica. I think you were kind of saying it more like Boudica.
That's maybe just the King's English in me. Boudica, Boudica. It's not as egregious as last episode that I listened to with Impetus. You were talking about Mashaber.
Well, somebody on YouTube gave me a hard time. That I think I said like Mashab. I said something about it being French, and they're like, Macabre is French in origin. I was just like, oh yeah. didn't even think about that. It's already French.
For British English and for French, we would pronounce it as macabre, obviously with a more of a French accent. But I know American English is more macabre, which I think is more, I think it's more entertaining to say it that way.
It feels good. It feels good to say it. It's emotionally satisfying. But let's continue here. We don't need to get too far down the pronunciation discussion just yet. That's going to come up again on the next weapon we'll talk about.
We need to farm that engagement kit.
If you have an opinion on how to pronounce Boudica C, I can't even decide how I'm saying it now. Let me know. I'd love to see it with the full, you know, grammatical markings in the comments on YouTube. Show me how it's done. Let's go back to it. Talking about, we kind of covered the stats a little bit, but let's just compare them real quick in a little bit more detail. So overall, it's got solid stats for the archetype. The precisions are, you know, they all kind of follow a pattern: high range, poor stability, lower aim assist. But compared to its peers, it's generally in pretty good shape. The highest base range at 63. The recoil at 98 is going to be largely vertical and fairly minimal. The stats otherwise are just pretty much in line. We don't need to go through each and every one of them. They're more or less just baselined along with the rest of the precisions. And the airborne effectiveness is at 22, which all other precision sidearms are at 12. So it is going to be far and away the best one to use if you like to bunny hop when you're using a sidearm, which I personally do. So that is good to know. The precisions do 56 to the head, 40 to the body. Optimal time to kill of 0.7 seconds with 3 crits, 1 body. Body time to kill of 0.93 seconds with 5 bodies. There is no middle ground here. So it's as long as you're not missing, you're killing a guardian in no more than 5 shots. In fact, very probably 5 shots, because these are sidearms and they do fire quite fast. So hitting 3 crits, it takes some practice. It takes some skill. It's not something you're going to pick this weapon up and just go out and do unless you're already ridiculously good at the game, at which point you don't really need my help. So that's kind of where we're at. I've got some notes on some of the damage buffs, but I want to get into the perks first. So let's take a look, and I want to get your thoughts here. As someone who's not especially a sidearm enjoyer, taking a look at what's available to you on the Boudica, what kind of jumps out at you? What do you see where you'd say, okay, how can I make this easy for myself? If I have to use this weapon, I'm required to get 100 kills. I can't swap. What am I going to do?
There's some really interesting perks here. I think we talked about it in Podcast Versus Enemies, and all three of us were not big sidearm fans, other than this season's Brigand's Law, but that's because Volt Shot's there.
Well,
but
yeah. Brigand's Law is hilarious in PvE.
Yeah. In terms of perks that I would maybe gravitate towards, sidearms are your sort of go-to close range. So you want to go for something like moving target, just to capitalize on the aim assistance changes, or threat detector. That's always a sort of go-to. You know, that within 15 meter range, you get that bump in your stability. It's 40, around about 40, if you're within 2 or more, which you tend to be in PvP, at least in 60s.
Quite often, yeah.
Yeah, and, pairing that with something like Pugilist or Swashbuckler Frenzy's there as well. We are big fans on PvE with Frenzy. That is your sort of bog standard. Maybe a little bit tricky to perform in PvP. It does have that quite large grace period before it actually procs. And interesting to see multi-kill clip. I don't tend to see that perk a lot in fairly recent weapons. So it's nice to see that again. That kind of doubled up kill clip perk. And gutshot straight as well, if you want that just raw 10% damage in for body shots. I think that's something I would maybe gravitate towards, then pivot off to something else, whether that's multi-kill clip or swashbuckler or pugilist, something like that, just to get myself kind of wrapped around how can I use this in PvP. Gutshot straight, yes, you do get that reduced target acquisition, but just that raw damage, and then kind of wean myself off that and go for something else. What's your thoughts with Boudicca in terms of damage perks or just general perks?
I like your analysis. I like the way you're coming at it. So one of the things I want to talk about first. Well, I'll follow up. Let's dive into the damage perks here, because they are definitely something to think about, because they do make a big difference for this weapon. So I've already done the math here. So I took a look at kind of the relevant ones. I skipped Frenzy because I feel like it's too difficult to kind of get going and then keep going with this particular weapon. I don't particularly care for it. I know there are Frenzy adorers out there who swear by it. It's a 15% damage increase, which, is pretty nice. But so it's essentially going to be pretty close to a single stack of multi-kill clip in terms of its effect. Multi-kill clip times one is about 17%. So not going to be a significant difference between the two of them in terms of effectiveness for your damage buff. But let me go ahead and go through what these weapons are going to, or what these perks are going to do for the weapon. So swashbuckler times one. If you get a kill, you turn around, there's somebody else right there. It's a, a pretty small damage buff, but it even that little bit helps. So that will give you, instead of requiring three crits in one body for the optimal, it makes it two crit, two body, which is much easier to achieve. Radiant will do the same thing for you if you're running a solar build that focuses on that. And Swash can also be stacked with Gerfalcons or the Surprise Attack charged with Light Mod. Adding either one of those onto the weapon and then stacking that swash times one on it is going to give you a very consistent four body shot kills with this gun, which is, let me tell you, pretty nice. That's a 0.7 second time to kill. All you have to do is not miss. As long as you can just hit them, you're good to go. And actually, charge with light is just a super, super good thing to be looking at on sidearms, because surprise attack is a massive, massive damage buff. Didn't used to work in the Crucible, now it does. And Surprise Attack by itself gives you a four body time to kill with the Boudicca C. The precisions do that much damage. So really, really just like crazy to not run charge with light mods if you're going to run a precision sidearm. It's enough that you can two crit one body for the optimal of 0.47 seconds. So big, big damage buffs do big things on these guns. But it's really that four body that I'm after, because 0.7 is very fast, makes for easy cleanups. The precisions have really good range for a sidearm. They really do, especially now that the aim assist is working. it's really nice. Swash times five will also let you four body any guardian. It's 33% damage buff, huge. There are builds obviously that can play into it. Arc, pretty good at it. The Stasis Warlock, of course, is just the king of getting melee kills for free by freezing everybody. Multi-kill clip times one will allow you to get a one crit three body in 0.7 seconds. It'll also allow you to three crit a guardian in 0.47 seconds, but that's pretty tough. And so you can expect the same if you're just using it with Gerfalcons. It's going to be about the same if you're just using it with high energy fire, going to be about the same. And any of those buffs are going to make it much easier but you're not really going to be like breaking the time to kill barrier there. And Gutshot by itself just natively makes the weapon 2 crit, 2 body. It does cost you in aim assist, but it is active 100% of the time as long as you're aiming down sights, which gives it a big advantage over the other damage buffs in terms of uptime. If you add in your Falcons on top of that, which also has very high uptime for Void Hunters, you can 4-body with that combo. And of course, any other damage buff that stacks with Gutshot, which is going to be high energy fire or surprise attack, or you know, any there's a number of exotics out there that can do this for various classes that are going to help get you to that 4-body. But that's kind of the breakdown there. What I've thrown a bunch of numbers, Court. Listening to those numbers, does anything jump out at you as far as builds that work well with the Boudica here, or what would you do?
Well, you mentioned surprise attack, which is one of those very rare 35% empowering buff. We'll talk about them later on in this episode, yeah. But that is a very unique one. You know, a lot of empowering buffs are more centered, Radiant being 7.5 or empowering buff tier 1, which are 15%, which includes your Falcons. But in terms of what I would maybe go for, I think Swashbuckler I'm kind of looking at just as a sort of, you know, kind of, right, just a classic perk.
Yeah.
I suppose Hunters do have that, and Titans have that that edge when it comes to melee-based builds, so you could play into that. It
absolutely.
It gets a little bit more, you know, it's a low floor to get into, and then a low ceiling to master in terms of it's quite an easy buff to get, you know, that 33.3%. For 5 stacks of Swashbuckler. I was going to actually ask about if you paired, let's say you paired Surprise Attack and Mechaneer's Trick Sleeves. Now, this is a very advanced build because Mechaneer Trick Sleeves is 35% as well, and it does stack with Surprise Attack. What would we be looking at in terms of, you know, shots to kill?
So now you're talking. So if you pair up Trick Sleeves and Surprise Attack, then you are just insta-banned from the Crucible for cheating. So this is a brilliant suggestion. Allows you to 2-tap to the head, 0.23 seconds, 2 crits, or you can 3-body in 0.47 seconds. Just like actually toxic right there.
It takes a little bit of a setup, though, because you need to have Surprise Attack active. Mechaneer's Trick Sleeves isn't necessarily free. It does have the bonuses to sidearms. Let's have a look. It's so it does give you that passive plus 50 airborne effectiveness, plus 100 handling, and plus 100 reload speed to sidearms. That's just passively. But when you are critically injured, so when you're in your health portion of the shoot, your health bar, you get a 35% increased damage until you're no longer at critical health, and that's when you're readying a sidearm. So it's not like a free damage buff as soon as you get health taken off. You have to swap into and ready your sidearm plus that's have right. Surprise attack. So it's not, you know, it's the math sounds really toxic, but there's a lot of setup here, which is why, you know, preface this with it's a very advanced strategy and build.
Absolutely. What it really does is it turns the sidearm into a true holdout weapon. You know, this is a setup where you are maining something else. You know, you're maining some energy pulse rifle. You know, you've got your Stars in Shadow or something out, or you know, you're doing something down in the energy slot. You're focusing on that. And you've got a build that is focused on getting you orbs and getting you charged with light, you know, either through orbs or some other means. And then when somebody comes in and tries to take you down up close, you swap and just absolutely melt them. So that's definitely a thing. It's definitely a thing you could do. But like you mentioned, the big problem there is the uptime is extremely low. You know, you have to be in dire straits for it to work. Now, of course, Trick Sleeves is just a phenomenal exotic for sidearms anyways. It makes sidearms by default just far better than they are. And it works great because the precisions have terrible handling compared to other sidearms. They're still fast, you know, but it is a great exotic for a sidearm enjoyer. Really, the only downside is that Bodic is competing with Forerunner for that slot, and that's not a place you want to be. So anyways, yeah, super, super dirty combo for those emergency situations.
So in terms of what would we be pairing with the column one and two perks, what barrels and magazines would you be wanting to pair this? If we're going down that route of this is your backup weapon, you swap to this weapon. Because I do look at Gunsmith here, and it does have a very low handling stat. So is that maybe something you'd want to, you know, focus on, just bumping that handling stat up?
So I think it would depend, right? If I am running Trick Sleeves, then of course no. I'll go ahead and skip that. Yep. Let Trick Sleeves do the hard work for me. One other thing that is worth noting, and I'm just drawing an absolute blank on the name of the mod right now. The Charge with Light mod for swapping. Quick Charge. There it is. It came to me. So Quick Charge is actually giving plus 25 handling to sidearms as well, as it turns out. So it's helping sidearms swap much faster, which just goes even further toward making it a near mandatory mod to run in so many of my builds. It's really, really tough to like make a build that doesn't include a fusion rifle, a shotgun, a sidearm, or an SMG. At which point, if I'm not running this, I almost feel like I'm making a big mistake. So I'm going to look for other ways to get that handling if I feel like it's a problem. And the reason for that is that while this is a relatively high range sidearm, it's still a sidearm. And I'm a big fan of pushing the range out as far as I can on a sidearm. So I like to just go for like range masterwork, hammer forged, you know, ricochet, of course, get a little stability in there as well. But I've played with versions of this that are higher stability, and I've played with versions that are higher range. And what I found is that since the aim assist buff to sidearms, you don't need the stability near as much as you used to. It used to feel really rough trying to land shots on a low stability version of this gun. But now, you know, now I'm out there and I'm running, you know, just bottom, like no stability at all. And it feels great. So that's kind of been my experience, you know, for somebody who's maybe, you know, not spent as much time with sidearms as I have. I think small bore is fine. I think fluted barrel is fine especially if you don't want to run quick charge. Fluted barrel is always nice. Big stat buffs there, lots of points coming into the build. But if you do run fluted barrel, I would say like range masterwork almost feels mandatory. Like really you want the extra range. Give yourself as much room to work in as you can. Cause it's just gonna make it that much easier to counter the apes. All right, that's kind of my take. Third column, I honest to goodness, the weakest column by far for this gun. Moving targets solid. I like moving target a lot. I like threat detector, but this weapon can hit outside of 15 meters. And so I'm not as big a fan of threat detector as I am on some shorter range sidearms. And then I actually don't mind hip fire grip. There are a lot of situations where I'm backpedaling where it's easier to hip fire than it is to try to aim down sights and backpedal. You know, you end up slowing yourself down and getting killed. So I do like hip fire grip as a nice option here. But yeah, that's, you know, I can't argue with anyone taking Pugilist. If you really hate aim assist, you've got the slick draw gut shot combo to just get rid of your aim assist and prove how good you are at clicking heads. And that also eliminates the need for any handling on the weapon as well. So yeah, that's the Bodica. I was excited to talk about this one. I love this weapon. I've been running gut shot on it, and it's just a ton of fun being able to stack that up with different damage buffs and consistently hit 50 to the body. So yeah, it feels really nice. All right, sir. Let's go to the pizza. Let's go to the pizza cat.
Yes, the Pizzicato 22 is probably the best pronunciation you're going to get out of me.
I like it.
We sort of mentioned this just before we started this episode, and just looking at the stats and the sort of perks of Pizzicato in it, I think we were not as kind with this on the PBE episodes. I think for good reason. It's a very weird placed submachine gun. It is your kinetic 900 RPM. Now, that is not a lightweight. It is just an adaptive frame. So a bit sad, because you do miss out on that really great boost that lightweight frames get, which is passively giving you that plus 20 mobility, and you get that increased forward movement speed as well. So... you know, I suppose you could maybe give this another go if you want to pair it with the recent SMG changes, maybe.
What's crazy to me is that lightweights get the mobility buff and also deal more crit damage than adaptives. Yeah. Like, they have every advantage. I don't get it.
It does have the Suro Synergy origin trait. It does give you that when you reload, you get that plus 40 handling, and you do get that 20% flinch resistance for 6 seconds. Not a lot of things that are giving flinch resistance as a like a perk that you can build into. So you could maybe pair this with a few perks and a few combinations, but honestly, I think I'm just going to echo with what we said on PBE. It's just, it exists. It's definitely an SMG that is here. I'm looking at the perks here. Obviously, we do have that rangefinder nerf coming up. We have a few damage perks. Two. We've got swashbuckler and multi-kill clip. But for an SMG, I don't know. I'm just not really coming up a lot of positives here. Weirdly, they've pugilist and demolitionist in the fourth column slots as well.
Yeah, that threw me off.
Osmosis is here.
It's set up very differently than I would have thought.
I'm looking at the column three slots and mulligans there for some reason. Eye of the Storm, I don't know if that's as useful for an SMG. Is that really something that you would...
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for a dueling perk, Eye of the Storm on a primary is always super good. But I think especially for a rapid-fire weapon like this, 900 RPM, it's going to be suffering from bloom pretty quickly. Mm. And Eye of the Storm does a great job at helping to clamp down on that accuracy cone and keep it from just shooting out massively and your bullets ghosting around the enemy. Eye of the Storm is the anti-Pulp Fiction scene perk.
But yeah, I'm not as impressed with this SMG. I was interested with it coming out, see how I would... You know, I always like to get a feel of these weapons. And when I did get a few rolls for at least for PvE, we were sort of recommending going for the sort of armor piercing and high cal or ricochet rounds and pair it with motion and swashbuckler, because that's sort of your really bog standard classic combo for an SMG. But I did manage to get at least a couple of those rolls, and it just didn't really feel good compared to lightweight SMGs. And you know, I suppose you could say its direct competition would be the Multimac, which is no longer available, but it is a lightweight frame, and you know, as you were saying there, Kit, it does have that fantastic, you know, crit bonus compared to adaptive frames here. So I don't know if you've got much more positive news you want to share for the listeners here.
Yeah, I mean, so it's also competing with this season's lightweight Out of Bounds, which is an Omalon adaptive. Has Omalon Fluid Dynamics, which is a phenomenal trait as well, that makes it just super stable, especially for a lightweight. And so it's a pretty rough comparison, no matter where you put it. There's only one other adaptive SMG. This is a kinetic adaptive SMG. There's also the Hero's Burden. In terms of just like the raw stat comparison, the stats on the Pizzicato, I got nothing here. We're farming that engagement in these episodes. The stats are solid. you know, baseline stat package, I'd be like, oh, okay, this is actually pretty appealing weapon. Just, you know, looking at like the range, stability, all of that. It does have 10 more points of stability than Hero's Burden, which is balanced out with 6 less points of aim assist. But it also has 22 airborne effectiveness, which, you know, again, is pretty great. And, you know, for an SMG, which is a weapon that you're going to often want to be using while airborne, is a good baseline to be starting from. There are a ton of exotics that allow you to really lean heavily into that with SMGs, you know, especially for Titans. If you want to be hip firing a submachine gun, you want to be doing it on Titan, I believe. And forgive me, I've played Titan like 6 times in the last 4 years. But I believe it's the Peacekeepers that I'm thinking of that allow you to get that plus 50 AE just for hip firing a gun. I'm not complaining. I'm just disappointed. But yeah, that said, the adaptive SMGs do 16 to the head, 11 to the body. Now, just for comparison's sake, 16 to the head is the worst crit damage of any submachine gun class. That's the least you can possibly do, by more than a full point. It's by like a point and a half almost of damage lower than the lightweights. To the body, they're doing 11. It's technically like around 11.3, we think. The lightweights we know are doing 10.9. So just barely more body damage than a lightweight. Significantly less crit damage. It's rough. It's rough out there for an adaptive submachine gun. Optimal time to kill suffers as a result. It's 0.73 seconds, which is going to be slower than both lightweights and aggressives, faster than precisions, but they lack the crazy range of precisions such as Shire's Wrath. It also requires 12 crits to hit, so it's functionally unachievable. The slower precisions require 7 crits and 2 bodies, so the slightly slower, much easier to do. Body time to kill is 1.13 seconds, which is the slowest for any submachine gun. The accuracy adjusted time to kill, 0.87 seconds, 8 crits and 6 bodies, which requires a higher crit percentage than comparable weapons for the most part. I think the lightweights are the only ones that are equally difficult, but they are faster, so they kind of make up for it. And so that's kind of it, man. Like the adaptives kind of really get kicked in the pants. To make matters worse, this gun can roll with Rangefinder, but Rangefinder directly competes in the same slot with the damage perks. So you've got to decide if you want consistency and range, or if you want bonus damage. And that's a tough one. I generally go with consistency and range on a weapon like this, but ultimately it makes me just not want to go with a weapon like this. You know, the damage perks do make a difference here, but the biggest problem, Swashbuckler, Multi-Kill Clip are the main PvP ones. The biggest problem with them is that they generally don't do a lot to reduce the high need for crit percentages to hit fast times to kill. So you end up relying a lot more heavily on the body time to kill, unless you are just really able to land those crits. So just to put it out there, Swash times 5 is going to give you an optimal 0.53 seconds with 9 crits. Pretty tough to do. Allows you to body shot in 0.8 seconds though, which is great. Except of course that other SMGs can do it better. Adjusted time to kill 0.6 seconds with 7 crits and 3 bodies. So again, high percentage of crits in order to avoid just, you know, defaulting to the body shot time to kill. Multi-kill clip is similar, but, you know, just a bit slower since it's a smaller buff. Multi-kill clip times 1 is an optimal of 0.67 seconds with 9 crits and 2 bodies. So again, very high crit percentage required. Even with that damage buff, I hoped it would be a little easier. It kind of puts it in the same ease of use as like a default unbuffed precision SMG, except that the precision SMGs are generally, you know, longer range. So that's rough. Body shot in 0.93 seconds with multi-kill clip, and the adjusted in 0.73 seconds with 7 crits and 5 bodies. And I've looked at various damage buff combinations on this gun, but by and large, it's tough to end up with anything that doesn't require like a 70% crit accuracy and that's fast and that some other SMG just doesn't already do better, or that some other SMG just isn't flat out easier to use, which is too bad because Sura Synergy is a phenomenal PvP perk. Really easy to prime the weapon by pre-firing and reloading and then entering an encounter. So if you're playing your radar, you can really, you know, have Sura Synergy up in a lot of your gunfights, which is really nice. And that's probably the biggest redeeming factor for the Pizza Cat, is it's got Sura Synergy going for it. So if you do just want to lean into like making it easy to use and not worrying about the time to kill being suboptimal, that to me feels like, you know, maybe the best direction to go in. So you mentioned perpetual motion. I would pair that with rangefinder. Perpetual motion buffs the reload speed, which plays into Sura Synergy, and that just makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I'm looking at the perk list here, and I think maybe you would share the same opinion here, is that if they moved some of the perks around, you know, I would be more happy if they did put rangefinder in the column 3 slot, just to give it a nice little bump up. Even like demo and pugilist, put them in the column 3 slot, just so you could pair this as like a almost like a utility weapon, like an auxiliary weapon, rather than this is the weapon you're going to be using a lot to bump up your abilities in PvP, in PvE as well, of course, but in PvP, you know, we play a lot off our abilities, our supers, but especially our melees and our grenades, especially this season.
Yeah.
Especially for Arc Titans.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just a little shake up with the perk pool would help this go a long way. And yeah, I think Sura's synergy for PvP is a very unique origin trait. And, you know, I think the only other top tier weapons in PvP that you want to pair that with are, you know, syncopation, as you've talked about way back in season 16. Yeah. Fortissimo is there as a pinpoint slug. You mentioned Hero's Burden and yesteryear, which is this season's Gambit weapon.
Right.
So it's
some solid pulse rifles with it.
Yeah. But just for the Pizza Cat, it's just not working out, really.
Yeah, you know, so if I had, there's kind of two perk setups that I would point people to if you're going to run this gun. If you think, you know what, I don't care what Kit and Court say, Pizza Cat is life. There are two things that I would be looking at in terms of my perk combos. So first up, taking a look at kind of your straight up, the perpetual motion rangefinder combination, I would be leaning hard into range to really maximize the benefit from rangefinder and kind of relying on keeping perpetual motion up to help buff the stability up to a better level. So I would say you probably want a range masterwork. Small bore, ideally, is going to give you a nice good buff to both, and then add on ricochet rounds that puts you at 65 range and 67 stability, which is a great place to be. Perpetual motion then buffs you up even further. Super easy to keep it active on an SMG. You just got to remember to constantly strafe while you're in range, while you're in ADS with rangefinder active to keep the full benefit up. And then, you know, you're doing all right. You're doing pretty okay. And perpetual motion just helps so much with keeping Sura Synergy active by boosting that reload for you. That's kind of for most Guardians, like that's what I would go with. Now, if you're running Peacekeepers, if you're Peacekeepers Titan, it all changes. So I got to remind you, of course, you know, you already know this, Titans, you already know this, but free hand grip for the mod. Get that big bonus to ready speed and accuracy while firing from the hip. Obviously, hip fire grip then comes in super handy. It gives you a 30-point stability buff, which means you can essentially ignore stability now on your other perks. So you can do range masterwork and hammer forged if you want to push the range out even further, get you up to 68, which is, you know, even a little bit better. If you want to get just really crazy, you could even do, you know, something like what's the name of the perk? Full bore. You could even go full bore if you want to get really, really crazy, push it out to 73. Not sure if the stability hit is going to be worth it, but pretty easy for you to counter with hipfire active, you know, boosting your effective stability up to 80, freehand grip helping with accuracy, and then you can throw threat detector on there, because since you're hipfire and you have to be close, threat detector is going to give you essentially 15 stability every time somebody is within hipfire range, which puts your net effective stability at 95 with full bore. It'll put it at 100 if you're running Hammerforged. So, you know, I think that's about the best you can do to take full advantage. Again, there are probably other SMGs that can do this very similar things and that have better times to kill, but it's there. All right. I got nothing else on the Pizza Cat, man.
If you've got any combinations, then please tag Kit and I on Discord and Twitter.
Yeah, I look forward to finding out that I'm wrong about adaptive SMGs. All right, Nick, we got one more primary, and then we have a heavy, and I'm going to be fully relying on you for the heavy here, because I've actually run the Taipan in Crucible a lot, but mostly just to level up my crafted version. And then every now and then I forget I have it on, and I pick up heavy, and I'm like, oh, crap. So I get a little bit of a sniping practice with it on accident once in a while, but I try to let other people take heavy instead. But before we get to that, Amit, the Amit AR2, the Omalon Solar Precision Auto Rifle, the precisions are 450 RPM, and it's got Omalon Fluid Dynamics, which is hands down my favorite Origin perk this season for PvP. It's just so delightful to have weapons just sort of like outperform in these ways that, you know, it's not boosting damage, it's not boosting range or aim assist. It's just like the gun just feels better to use. And that's what Omalon Fluid Dynamics does. Just better stability, better reload speed. And it allows me to exercise that nervous tick of reloading after every single time I fire the weapon. And so it's scratching an itch that I didn't even realize I had until I got this perk. What are your
you
thoughts
and me
on
both.
The Amit? You've been using it?
I am also a compulsive reloader.
I was gonna say I wouldn't call you repulsive. I mean,
no.
You're unshaven, but
I'm part of that like old Call of Duty and Battlefields kind of era of FPSs.
Yeah.
So like always reloading after a kill is natural to me.
Right.
So it's the same here with Amit, and Omalon Fluid Dynamics is one of those sleeper hits when it comes to PvP. It does have its uses in PvE, but for PvP, it just ramps up that stability and reload speed. And you can pair it with the recent changes to auto rifles in general and directly to precisions. In general, yeah. We had the increased effects of the stability stat on recoil reduction by around 20% at the high end. And for precisions, they increased the critical damage multiplier from 1.5 to 1.55, which raises the critical damage from 30 to 31. So having all this wrapped up in a nice little bow here makes the Amit a very stable and rewarding auto rifle. I have used a little bit of it. I don't tend to be a big AR PvPer. I am more on the side of SMGs, but I've heard a lot of praise with Amit, with how stable you can really build into it, and obviously ramps up with Omalon Fluid Dynamics. It's got some really interesting perks that you can really exploit. I'm looking, of course, at dynamic sway reduction.
Heck yeah.
That's your go-to.
It is. That's my baby. Can't stop.
If you want to go for something that's, you know, if you're not as ability focused, you could go for surplus. That does give you that reload speed handling stability, which ramps up the more abilities you don't use. That's an interesting perk that you could combo. If you're quite okay without dynamic sway reduction, then go for something like surplus. And in terms of column 4 slots, I think we mentioned when we're talking about Boudicca, we're talking about, you know, Swashbuckler. It doesn't have Swashbuckler here, but does have the grenade version, which is Adrenaline Junkie, and that's your sort of go-to damage perk. Gutshot Straight is here as well. Again, it's just a 10% to body shots. In terms of other things, I mean, would you say, I mean, tap the trigger, it's not really that viable?
I would disagree. I'm gonna...
All right, okay. So, I do have tap the trigger here as one of my notes. Yeah. I just wasn't sure in terms of its viability, its usefulness, especially when you have something like gut shot or adrenaline junkie.
So I would say that it's certainly not mandatory on the weapon. Now, I will say to take full advantage of the AMET and anomalous fluid dynamics, I would recommend running either tap the trigger or dynamic sway reduction on the weapon, because one of the weapon's strengths is that for a precision AR, it is incredibly stable, which allows you to just sort of shoot in a straight line without any meaningful recoil, as long as you are building into that, right? If you are ignoring that and just trusting the origin perk by itself, your stability is getting lower as you continue to fire and your bloom's getting worse. And so you're kind of like, it's actually like almost doubly annoying because it's that much, because both your stability is going down. And of course, when you continuously fire, every following shot has less aim assist and less accuracy. And the effect gets worse the lower into the magazine you get. So Omelon Fluid Dynamics is one of those perks where it feels great as long as you are set up to take advantage of it. And so dynamic sway reduction is kind of the natural pairing because it increases accuracy as you continuously fire. Maxing out at 0.6 seconds, and it effectively negates and then reverses the effects of bloom on your accuracy. So it's hugely powerful. It also just throws a stability bump on there to help make up for the lost stability as you're firing. You know, since Omelon Fluid Dynamics, you're bleeding stability with every bullet. DSR counteracts that for those first 0.6 seconds, which is most of the time that you need. You only need a couple of shots after that to finish somebody off. And then you can reload and go back to full. But so I'm a big fan. Right now, I have been playing the AMET as pure laser beam. I've got enhanced DSR and enhanced tap the trigger. And I'm just starting to experiment with going just one or the other to see how I feel about it. But I, you know, if you want to play with like literally the easiest weapon to use in the game, craft an AMET with DSR and tap the trigger, and all other weapons will feel like trash afterwards. Like they just, you're like, what? Guns have recoil? I forgot. Like, it's ridiculous how it feels. So that's kind of my feeling on it. Like, I like to just lean super hard into what the gun does that no other gun can even come close to doing. So yeah, I mean, and to just kind of the numbers, I gave the numbers there on dynamic sway. It's gradually increasing accuracy and stability over that 0.6 seconds. The accuracy cone size can be decreased. It's the effect like is massive. It's basically down to initial accuracy for the weapon so far as we can tell in the game. Tap the trigger on trigger pull is giving you 40 points of stability, reduces your recoil kick by 50%, reduces accuracy cone size by 10%. So it's essentially with those two combined, you know, your accuracy cone is just like whatever the smallest is that it can be. Bullet goes straight. And that's really what you want on an auto rifle. Just straight headshots every time. Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of my take. I talked a lot. I'm absolutely in love with those perks. But yeah, have you experimented with any of the other ones, or you're asking me what the numbers are?
It was more so just to ask you the numbers, just so for the listener's benefit. In terms of, you know, there's a lot of other perks here, but they're more curated towards PvE. You know, we talk about adaptive munitions a lot because it's a very useful perk in that particular environment. And incandescent is here.
Yeah.
But would you say really incandescent's got much utility? You can synergize it with the various solar subclass perks and modifiers, but is that maybe something that would come up a lot in PvP?
I would say the times that it's useful are fairly low. There are definitely occasional situations where you can 2v1 successfully thanks to incandescent. If you see them first, right? If they see you first, you're dead. Like, it's, you know, that's how it goes in a 2v1. If you see them first, you open fire. You know, you can, as long as you hit your shots, you can drop that first guardian pretty quick. And then the explosion is going to throw off the aim of the second guardian and damage them, allowing you to get a quick cleanup before they can take you out. So that will happen. But we're talking every, you know, for most people, every few matches at best, right? And I've run a lot of incandescent weapons in the Crucible looking for those situations. And it's just, they're tough to find. Sometimes you end up seeking them out, which is not a good thing to do, because when you go looking for trouble, trouble finds you. It's really fun to watch them blow up. It's really emotionally rewarding in the Crucible to use incandescent, but it does not tend to reward your KDA as much as it does your serotonin. So that's kind of the balance. Gutshot is pretty decent on this weapon. It makes the optimal time to, so the optimal time to kill is 0.8 seconds, 7 crits and 2 bodies. With Gutshot, it's 6 crits, 3 bodies. So a little easier. The body shot time to kill is 1.1 seconds. With Gutshot, it's 1 second, which is phenomenal body shot time to kill. The adjusted time to kill is 0.9 seconds with 4 crits and 6 bodies, which is super easy to do. With Gutshot, you can hit that same, kind of that same number, or you can do it a little faster. You can hit 0.8 seconds with 6 crits and 3 bodies. You know, so hitting that optimal has become so much easier that it's effectively, you know, like your default time to kill, as long as you're reasonably accurate. So Gutshot's quite effective in terms of making this weapon easier to use. Now, Adrenaline Junkie, I often kind of ignore for PvP because it's so much harder to build a grenade-heavy build in the Crucible and actually have enough uptime to take full advantage of it. You know, aside from Glacier Grenades, where you're not really getting, especially these days, you're not getting a lot of Glacier Grenade kills, and so you can't really play into Adrenaline Junkie with them the way you once might have been able to. That said, it is a huge damage buff. You know, it's 33%, just like Swash, just like Kill Clip. It's a game changer. You can 5 crit a guardian in 0.53 seconds. You can 3 crit, 3 body a guardian in 0.67 seconds, blazingly fast, you know, hitting out to 34 meters. That's just a really, really solid time to kill. But if you're going for like, you know, those very fast times to kill, I feel like you probably just want to be running a high impact pulse rifle. You know, I think it's a matter of like other guns can do that too, and they can do it at greater distances. So I like the AMET. That's for sheer ease of use, essentially. Yeah.
I should point out here as well that AMET and our next weapon, Taipan, are craftable.
Yes.
So you can get the enhanced versions of DSR and TTT, dynamic suede reduction, and tap the trigger, and the other perks as well, if you want to really capitalize on those effects. I think Bungie's came out and said, you know, generally speaking, it's around about a 5 to 10% increase with the enhanced perks. So you can really capitalize on those stat buffs.
Yep.
With those enhanced perks.
From the description, they're both timer effects. So the DSR one, right, means it maxes out faster. And then it, you know, just a reminder, it maxes out and then stays active as long as you keep firing. And then tap the trigger, it just lasts a little bit longer. It's based on other ones. I haven't timed this one specifically, but it's, you know, probably a second at most, probably a fraction of a second longer, but longer enough that you're very nearly at your time to kill before it drops. So
I'll also highlight, if you're a Titan, you can pair this with Acton Warrig. It's not so much for the refreshing of the magazine every 1.5 seconds. You get a 10% refresh, but it is for that passive plus 30 airborne effectiveness. It does have a base of 20, so you can bump that up to 50, which I think is more or less kind of base level in terms of airborne effectiveness, if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty close. You know, if you throw an Icarus mod on there, you'll be at 65, which means that you now have perfect accuracy, or at least, you know, you have baseline grounded accuracy in the air, combined with these perks, essentially perfect accuracy in the air, and a good chunk of aim assist too. So yeah, definitely makes an auto rifle playable in the air if you go that route, which is not something people normally expect. Well, what else can we say here? I'll say for the Amit, because it's got just like crazy mad stability boosting perks going on, I full on just ignore stability and the barrels and mags and masterwork. I want all the range I can get. I run full bore on my crafted one. Range, the range boost from, you know, the quote unquote masterwork for the crafted ones from the default trait. And then, you know, ricochet rounds is nice to kind of counter the stability loss from full bore, because I don't necessarily want to like zero it out. I can just afford to take the hit, you know, but if you go high cal or armor piercing and you're running DSR and tap the trigger, I think you're going to be fine. If you prefer one of those, I don't think there's in PvP a good reason to prefer one of those, but I'm not going to judge you too hard. You could also run light mag if you want a little more reload speed. But Omalon Fluid Dynamics is pretty nice for reload speed buffs, so I don't think you need it. I'm curious, have you, and I know that you've already talked about this weapon on PvE, but if we're taking this weapon out just into casual PvE, is this one worth crafting a PvE version for? You know, if we're looking to go maybe run some lost sectors or something, we want a solar auto rifle. Is there a build here that makes sense?
Yeah, so we recommended fluted or small bore. I know you talked about like stability is already kind of maxed, but in terms of PvE, we pivot off from like maximizing the stability. We've got more of a openness towards building into damage perks.
Right.
We also mentioned like high cal rounds, just for that you get a much greater benefit in PvE with the knockback that you do against various combatants. And for perks, we would go for either stats for all and one for all. We call that the sofa combination, or ambitious assassin and incandescent, just for, you know, just going into some casual play strike playlists or lost sectors, just to really capitalize on, you know, you don't need to reload a lot and you've got a nice stable weapon here. And incandescent obviously has a lot more utility in PvE. And I was sort of looking up the synergies and interactions that are on my spreadsheets that I've been curating towards all the various sandboxes. And you compare that with, you know, obviously Scorch itself has the effect that you, once you get to 100 stacks, you get the ignition. But in terms of pairing it with Scorching to other combatants, you can go for Ember of Searing, which gives you that melee energy back. Ember of Singeing, which gives you class ability regen, and then obviously pairing it with the various ignition sources, synergies and interactions, like Ember of Wonder, ignition multi-kills create an orb of power, Ember of Blistering, which is ignition kills grant grenade ability energy. A lot of synergies and interactions that you can pair this with, and I think it's a very solid weapon to do that. I do have instead of a bit ambitious assassin, I think I went for stats for all and incandescent.
Sure.
As my 3 and 4, and it just works like a treat. It's a nice, solid, bog standard like go to weapon. If I'm not really thinking about builds per se or like anything high level, this is just a nice weapon to go for. It does compete with the multi tool from last season, and again, I am more of a SMG player than an auto player in PvE as well.
Fair enough.
But it is for if you just want to go into a nice casual playlist, then yeah, go for that PvE role, and it'll just work. There's not a lot of thinking when it comes to an AR with incandescent.
Yeah, I wanted to get your take, because I've personally been enjoying taking it into lost sectors when the burn is solar. I have a turnabout incandescent role that just kind of dropped randomly, so I haven't had to craft a separate version yet. I haven't kind of decided if I want two of them or not. I probably need to clean my vault first before I do that. But yeah, I've kind of been enjoying it casually, and I was like, boy, this just feels nice. It's just easy to use. It's got enough range that I don't have to get close. It's got fun perks. But yeah, I wasn't really, you know, I always kind of I realize I'm not necessarily stocking up a lot of times on the optimal combos in terms of perks for PvE, and listening to you guys doesn't help that confidence, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I deleted that last week, or, you know, so it reminds me what I should be keeping.
like I'm looking at the two perks, or sorry, the two sandboxes and the perk recommendations, and it's starkly different to the recommended perks that you've mentioned in this episode with PvP, and then obviously the ones that I've just mentioned for PvE. But I think in both environments, it just feels really good. It's like I said with Pizza Cat, I was not a fan of the feeling of Pizza Cat. It's the same with Amit. I am a really... Sorry, it's the inverse of that for Amit. It feels just a solid weapon. Like, it's not going to let you down. It's not going to give you any grief. It just works and does its job. It's just that kind of jack-of-all-trades kind of type.
Yeah, it does. It just... it feels good in a way that precision autos haven't in a long time. So that's been really nice to have, kind of a weapon in an archetype that I had sort of been ignoring for the last few years suddenly grabbed my attention and not for a good reason and not let go. All right. We've got one more new world drop weapon to talk about this episode. Also craftable. There was a bit of a frenzy on social media when people first realized what the perk combos were for this gun when it first became available. And so I had to get some input to decide the optimal choice here. So I'm going to pass it over to you to talk about, and this is yet another pronunciation quandary, but I call it the Taipan 4FR.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right.
Pronunciation, Taipan 4FR.
Going with it.
It is the Void Precision LFR. It's a 5.33 charge time. It's single firing, so it's a difference to Storm Chaser, which is that triple burst kind of pulse rifle, light linear fusion rifle. It does have Vice Stinger. That's a very solid perk in PvE. Damaging an enemy with this weapon has a small chance to reload the magazine, increases movement speed while aiming down sights. So yeah, I'm obviously going to prefix this with the this is going to be more pivoted towards PvE than PvP.
Yes, absolutely fair.
Don't see a lot of heavy LFRs in the Crucible. We do see a lot of special LFRs
so
in the Crucible.
So many lately. Oh, man. Freelance Trials was just full of them.
But, yes, in terms of where does this place... So I've looked a lot at the various elemental LFRs, and the LFRs are really hot right now for PvE. There has been a little bit of a ruckus when it comes to... you're given this for free when you've got something like Wreaths of Regret, which is attached to Trials. It is leaving after this season as well. But in terms of where does this place, it really depends on the perk setup. So I'll go through a few examples here. You would probably want to go for Fluted Enhanced Battery, either Field Prep or Triple Tap, for if you're a solo player with Frenzy, or Firing Line if you're in a group activity, so more so created towards raids. You could maybe exploit that in Grandmasters, but it's not as something that would pop up. In terms of, I think this has been the big contentious point, is which battery would you go for? And I did mention Enhanced. Other people would maybe suggest something else. Enhanced does give you that one-shot room for error with Triple Tap. You can get more of an exploitation with Triple Tap. You could go for Accelerated to slightly increase the DPS, but that offsets with a reduction in total damage. The Enhanced version would be better of the two because you theoretically also have a better opportunity to proc with Vice Stinger. So I wouldn't bother with the ionized because it also provides the same ammo bump as enhanced, but it has worse reload.
Right.
So in terms of its placement, Taipan is essentially almost, not exactly, but almost the same as Reed's Regret in terms of DPS and damage. So it's a toss-up. Do you want to use this? This is your Void one. You can pair it with your Font of Might builds, your damage stacking builds that we'll talk about very shortly as well. You can pair that, or you can pair it with Stasis with Wreaths of Regret, which has better utility, much greater utility, and you can easily spawn and synergize with elemental wards, elemental wells, while you're using elemental shards to proc Font of Might. It's a much easier job to do with Wreaths of Regret. So you might have a slight edge if you plan to spec into high damage builds, but it is doable with Taipan. I think Hunters and Warlocks have like a specific synergy here because they do have access to really high-powered supers. So it's really a toss-up. I've seen the commentary with, you know, Taipans just basically power crept over Razor Grit, and that's not the case. It's not the case. They exist in their own environments, and they are present in their own abilities, and you can build into them, and they exist, and they can exist together. I think for this season, though, Taipan's going to have the one-up because, as I said, Razor Grit is going to be getting the chop from the loot pool.
Yeah. So then Taipan will kind of be the new default option until something else comes along to supplant it or compete with it.
I will say, like, this is very much the quote accessible LFR compared to other LFRs because they are more curated towards end game activities. I keep mentioning Reach Regret, but Storm Chaser is attached to the season 17 dungeon. The name that escapes me, Duality, there we go. We have another Cataclysm, that is like the cherry on top of the cake LFR, but it's attached to Vow of the Disciple raid. And if you want a crafted top tier version, you need to get 5 recipes to craft that. So it's a lot of time investment. So I can see the gravitation towards Taipan because it's really easy just to get. I mean, it is essentially given to you when you do that crafting mission. So all these LFRs that I've been talking about, they all have their own areas of expertise. That's my little quasi rant for this podcast.
No, that's good. That's good. It's good to kind of keep that in mind and like remind people, you know, that just because one thing is good, it doesn't mean that other stuff is therefore bad. You know, we can have multiple, you know, solid weapons in the same type. But, you know, when they've got different damage types, the synergies are going to be different and you'll use them for different reasons or different perk combos. You know, one may be, you know, quote unquote, objectively better, but that's going to be for an ideal situation. And maybe there's an encounter where it just doesn't work. It just doesn't make sense. You know, there are encounters where firing line is not an optimal perk because you can't use it effectively because you can't all squad up. Suddenly you're like, gosh, I wish I had a box breathing weapon right now and I could get a nice big damage buff, but you don't. You took the wrong one. So I think that's a good mental check to be like, hey, there's lots of good loot. I can like what I like and I can let other people like what they like and we can both be correct. You know, so that's always something I like to encourage.
Yeah, as a seasoned PvE player, I have all 4 of the elemental LFRs. You've got your Storm Chaser as Arc, you've got Taipan for Void, Cataclysmic for Solar, and Razor Grit for Stasis. And they all fit into many builds that I've created for all types of activities.
Yeah.
Okay, one may have a slight edge in X activity, whereas Y has a different type of effect in Y activity. So they all are in their own little kind of groups and they're all very viable when it comes to PvE. But I don't think we've got much to say about Taipan when it comes to PvP.
Well, so I'm gonna put some stuff out there for those folks who do want to use a heavy linear fusion in PvP. You know, you can do it. If you can stack up the right damage buffs, you can absolutely body people with a heavy, so it is possible. So the heavier linear fusions are doing about 166 to the body in PvP. Obviously, to the head, they're evaporating guardians and supers alike. So, you know, land your headshots, of course. But if you want to focus on those body builds, any of the 15% empowering buffs that are available will get you to 190.9 damage, which is pretty good. You know, that's fine. It's absolutely fine. That's gonna one shot to the body any guardian up to 5 resilience, but it will fall short of 6 resilience and up. Yet one more reason to run high resilience builds in the Crucible these days, as if, you know, Arbalest and Lawrence being comboed with these wasn't bad enough. So you you can certainly do some damage with the 15% damage buff. You'll get some perhaps undeserved kills. You'll leave other guardians absolute and have a good chance to maybe blint into a follow-up to finish them off with a long-range weapon like a scout or, you know, maybe a long-range pulse rifle. So that is something you can lean into. If you're going that route, if that's your plan, what I would personally do is probably run opening shot, of course, in that fourth column to give you the extra aim assist and range that's going to help put you out there. It's 20 aim assist, 25 range, improved accuracy cone. So that's a great perk. And then probably fragile focus. The third column has nothing for PvP. It's just a straight dead column. You've got like reload perks and shield breaking perks and perks for when your friends are close to you and perks for getting ammo back for rapidly landing headshots. It's wild. It's impossible. But so fragile focus is literally your only viable PvP perk. And hey, you know, it helps you max out your range stat when combined with opening shot. You get up very high. That'll put you at plus 45 to range, which puts you at 93. So, you know, very good, very helpful, as long as you haven't taken damage. So that's one way to go. If you are going that route, if you're aiming to body guardians, adding a 15% damage buff onto a weapon with liquid coils may allow you to also body shot over 6 resilience. And so that's kind of the, you know, you get a little bit slower charge time, but I think it actually should put the damage over 194, which means perhaps you could even take it up over 7 resilience, hitting the vast majority of guardians for one-shot bodies. You can do that with Empower and Rift, with High Energy Fire, with Drill Falcons, with, what is it, the Titan Firewalker thing. You have to get like a solar kill first to activate that, so it's not ideal for the Taipan. Am I forgetting any other easy ones, Court? The easy 15% buffs?
So I'll just list them here. You've got Empowering Rifts, you've got Lumina's Blessing of the Sky. If you get your Falcons there, Mantle of Battle Harmony. So you would need to be on your Void class for that to work with Taipan. You've got Boots of the Assembler, which kind of works in tandem with Lumina's. You mentioned Firewalker there with Path of the Burning Steps. And you've got High Energy Fire. So if you've got that proc'd as well.
Yeah, so any of those will make... The thing, of course, is that Taipan's not really special. These are all going to make any heavy linear fusion rifle very effective in body-shotting guardians in the Crucible. So that's kind of your go-to path. Now, if you want to get real crazy with it, you want to level this up, level this build up to the next, and you're super good at landing headshots, you can body-shot guardians all the way up to 10 resilience by running Focused Fury. Focused Fury gives you a 20% damage buff for 11 seconds after you have hit 50% of the magazine as precision hits. There's no timer for those precision hits in the top 50%. So it does not matter how fast or slow you get them, as long as you get them. But after that, generally, I think this is going to actually activate on the second precision in a row. So when you fire that third shot, Focused Fury should kick into effect and give you the damage buff right there. It can be a little wonky. It's not always perfect on some weapons, so, you know, bear that in mind, but it will give you 20%. You know, again, third column, you really have nothing except fragile focus that is of any use at all to you. But you can pair Focus Fury with a liquid coils build to break over 203 damage to the body. You can also run it if you are running it in tandem with any of those other damage buffs. You could run it in tandem with Radiant, you know, rather than liquid coils to get over 200. You can run it in tandem with any of the other effects that Court mentioned to get over 200. So there are ways to do it. Like, it's work, but you can make it happen. The tough part about going that route is you're giving up opening shot, which is literally far and away the best PvP perk on the weapon. So, all right, that's it. That's all I got. Court, we've kind of shifted into this talk as I was hoping that we would with this weapon. There are a lot of damage buffs floating around in the Crucible these days, and it's pretty opaque to a lot of guardians which ones do and do not stack with each other. So I'm hoping you can take us through, you know, maybe a 10-15 minute crash course in damage stacking for the Crucible, you know, for the PvP main, what are the rules that we have to follow? What falls into what category? And are there any special cases to kind of make note of?
Yeah, so I think it's important to really, at the top level of this section, is to like split everything into various categories. So the sort of three biggest that we'll talk about, things get a little bit more kind of, can get sub-split in PvE, but in PvP, we'll just keep it nice and simple. You've got three of those categories. The first category are global debuffs. The second are empowering buffs. And the third would be everything else, essentially, like weapon perks, stuff that aren't considered as an empowered buff, but do work in PvP, that are attached to exotics, or exotic weapons, armor, etc., etc.
Yeah. Countless, font of countless might. Random stuff.
Yeah, many random stuff. Font of Might doesn't work in PvP, so I don't need to really cover that, but it, just as a quick section here, is that Font of Might isn't considered an empowering buff in PvE, so you can stack that with one global debuff, one empowering buff, Font of Might itself, and then everything else. People tend to call it an outlier. I don't tend to call it that much of an outlier because it's part of a different category.
Sure.
But again, I won't go into too much detail because it's not really applicable in PvP. Right. So we'll start off with global debuffs. Not as common in PvP. You've got three different tiers. Weirdly enough, in stark contrast to PvE, you've got tier 2 debuff, 50%, 50%. Those include both tethers for right. Hunter. They've got variable duration, and if you're hit but not killed by a trapped cannon, which I don't think that's really going to happen in PvP. If you're using trapped cannon, you're using it to kill.
Pretty unlikely, but possible.
Yeah, so that category doesn't really come to effect here. 50% is a big debuff, but you're only really going to see it with tethers, and by that point, the person that's tethered should be going down very quickly.
Quick question, does Disruption Break fall into that category?
Yeah.
Or is that something else?
Disruption Break is classified as, quote, small d debuff,
huh.
But it's not like a major debuff tier. So it's 50%, and yeah, it does work in PvP, but it's classified as just a weapon perk. So you could theoretically pair Disruption Break with a weaken effect, and you'll get them both stacked 50% times 7.5, which is...
It's a lot of extra damage, like 64, 60-something?
It's 61.25%. So, and just with how Disruption Break works, they're already quite low
right.
health anyway. You've stripped their shields. So, it doesn't really make a big difference. You're guaranteeing that final kill, that final bullet kill. So that's tier 2. That's your big one. That's 50%. Doesn't really come to play. I think the next one also doesn't really come to play as well, and that's your other debuffs. That's tier 1, and that's 30%. Divinity is in this category, but I'm wagering this may go down when we get the Divinity changes for PvE. This might get knocked down to 15 or 7.5. And Fellwinter's Helm, which is the Warlock powered melee, provides a 50-meter debuff radius for a 10-second duration. Don't really see a lot of Fellwinter's Helm. It's a sort of kind of niche build. So, again, probably won't really talk about those two effects really in PvP. What I will talk about are the weaken effects that you'll get quite frequently. Collective Obligation obviously has its own synergy with all the void debuffs and effects. Heart Shadow, very much like Trapped Cannon, you're maybe not going to utilize the weaken effect from Heart Shadow, but the five ones that you'll probably be seeing quite a lot are Night Stalker's Snare Bomb, when you do a hit on them for 2.5 second duration, Trapper's Ambush Smoke Bomb, Quick Fall, or the Smoke Cloud, that's a 5-second duration, Stylus Executioner's Melee Applicator, so when you trigger Stylus Execution, you will have a, during that time, when you're invisible, you can apply a much larger melee damage, which will also weaken them, and that's a 2.5 second duration. You've got the Void Soul from Child of the Old Gods, when that tethers, we see a lot of that in the PvP. So base duration of that is 2.5 seconds, but it keeps refreshing every time it tethers. So really, it's up to about 13 seconds, depending on the lifespan of the child of the old gods.
So good.
And then finally, we've got Echo of Undermining, which is the grenade weakener, which we might see a little bit. So those are the five I think you'll see quite a lot. And that's part of the global debuff category. So all of those, including tier 1 and tier 2 debuffs, don't stack together. That's the important distinction here, is you can't have a snare bomb from a Night Stalker and a Child of the Old Gods active. They don't like stack with each other. It's just the 7.5% for one.
So when those are different, does the stronger one overwrite, or does it just keep the first one?
So I've been trying to get away from calling it override, because I think that's not necessarily a great term to call it. In essence, yes, the damage stack does get overridden. So let's just, for example here, let's take Tether from Night Stalkers. We'll take that. Someone's tethered. And then a Child of the Old Gods is also tethering the enemy. So I mentioned they don't stack together, but Tether's debuff would have higher priority than the Child of the Old Gods. But the Child of the Old Gods has different effects. It siphons like health and energy for your grenade and stuff, depending on your rift. That still works in tandem with the Tether from Night Stalker. So that's why I'm trying to not call it override, because that gives the implication is that Tether is overriding all of Child of the Old Gods' effects, but that's not the case here.
Yeah, so priority makes more sense. So if essentially what's happening is, if, you know, say you're tethered, it's getting close to wearing off, a child hits you, the weaken from the child is still there, it's just not stacking. And so you can't see any effects in the game. But then if the tether wears off, the weaken from the child is still there, and now it's effective because the larger debuff has worn off, and so now you can see the difference. Good to know.
Absolutely.
Good to clarify.
Yeah. So weakens there, those five ones that I mentioned, are 7.5%. I'm not sure if I mentioned that at the start there, but quite a small amount. It's smaller than Radiant, which I'll talk about very shortly. But it has some utility. It's got some use. It might not make your bog standard four shots turn into three shots, but it's when, you know, you're putting in some chip damage, that's how it matters. And especially in, like, you know, 3v3s, I think those very small damage debuffs are important, because it is just, it's a difference between someone one-shotting you or you one-shotting them back. And a tiny difference of 7.5% is all that matters, really, in those type of environments. But you got any more questions related to global debuffs before we talk about empowerment buffs?
I was just going to remind folks, we've talked a couple of times in this episode, I've talked about the effect of one stack of Swashbuckler, and that's actually like 6.7%, so it's even smaller. So 7.5% doesn't sound like a big buff, but it can be enough to make it easier to get a kill, or even to, you know, to improve, say, a less accurate bit of shooting into a better time to kill. And when you're talking about team shots, then it can really stack up. So yeah, just echoing what you've said there, kind of with a callback to the numbers we've given for some of these guns today. But yeah, let's dive into what's next.
So empowering buffs are a lot more common in PvP. You've got a lot of categories here. Again, a bit like global debuffs, the top level, the higher potent effects are maybe not as seen or as useful, or no, that's not the right phrase, but you don't tend to see a lot of the sort of higher up empowering buffs. So those are, I'll start off with the 35% empowering buffs. That's your four stacks of Path of the Burning Steps. Kit, you mentioned that earlier on.
Yeah.
So if you manage to get four stacks of Firewalker, you will do 35%. And that counts for all weapons. It's not just solar. Solar is how you proc the effect.
Right.
But you can use that with any weapon. I don't tend to see Banner Shield, Titans, Weapons of Light, the big shield that they make that you can stand behind and shoot through. I don't tend to see that in PvP at all, a lot. But I think the biggest one, as we mentioned much earlier in the episode, was Surprise Attack. That's the supreme one that you want to pair with your sidearms. And just a little reminder how that works is reloading or readying a sidearm converts your charge with light stacks into bonus rounds. So one stack of charge with light equals five times buff rounds. So if you've got four stacks of Charge of Light, you'll get 20 rounds back that you can use for your sidearm to really power up your utility with Boudica that we were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, that makes any sidearm just a terror to go against.
25% tier, we have, I'll make a little comment here that there is a little bug here with how Path of the Burning Steps Firewalker stacks. When Firewalker is at two stacks, it's 25%. When it's at three stacks, it's at 20%. So those are flipped. They should be the other way around. It's a little bit of a bug. So you're punished for having three times because two times is a higher value than three times.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, it's really weird. I need to double check that maybe next season, see if they've fixed that, but that's been there for quite a while.
Good to know.
But I don't really see a lot of Path of the Burning Steps. It does have some great utility. I think there was more of a buzz about it during Stasis 1.0. But yeah. In terms of the other buffs in that category, we've got Word of Dawn, Weapons Light, and we have Well of Radiance. Those are both 25%. We are seeing a lot of bubbles and wells in PvP. So if you're getting unexpected, you know, if you're unexpectedly dying a lot because someone may have are active in a Well of Radiance or they have Weapons of Light from a Ward of Dawn, that's probably why. 25% is significant.
Yeah.
The next tier is 20%, but that's not really as applicable in PvP because the only one, as I mentioned, is Firewalker. There's Argent Ordnance as well, but that's not really applicable in PvP. That's a PvE perk.
Right, yeah.
The next two categories are the more important ones here. So 15%, we've been talking about them a little bit. I mentioned the full list of them. So that's your Falcons, Boots of the Assembler, Mantle of Battle Harmony, Empowering Rift, Lumina, and High Energy Fire. So that's all 15%. And our final category, which is the sort of global solar effect, and that's Radiant. You've got Hunter's Acrobat's Dodge, Hunter's Lightweight Knife with a precision hit, Warlock's Rain of Fire from that particular exotic buffs. If you get an LFR or a fusion rifle kill, you'll get a 7.5% Radiant effect that can be applied to all weapons, not just LFRs and fusion rifles. And of course, Rain of Fire does give you that plus 30 airborne effectiveness to LFRs and fusion rifles. And Icarus Dash does refresh all your weapons as well. You've got Ember of Torches, which is the powered melee hit. And as a general kind of summary, all radiant effects have a 10-second duration or 15 seconds with Ember of Solace, with the exception of Rain of Fire, where it's 7.5 and 12.5 seconds, respectively. And you can, of course, synergize with Ember of Empyrean to extend Radiant by 4 seconds on each solar kill. So that's your Radiant effects. I will just quickly note that Acrobat's Dodge and Ember of Torches can give you and your nearby allies Radiant. And that's a 7.5% buff. So, like global debuffs, your empowering buffs can't stack with each other. So, I think this is maybe the most egregious point that I see out in the internet is where, or in the Destiny community, is that people are saying you can pair High Energy Fire with Radiant, or they can pair your Falcons, which is obviously very hot right now, with a Radiant effect or with Surprise Attack. That's not the case. Very much like global debuffs, you can have multiple at once, but the highest will have higher priority, but there will be other effects that can still proc during that time. And obviously, if one drops off, let's say Jar Falcons, which is only 3 seconds, if that drops off, but you also have a, let's say, Radiant effect, once that Jar Falcons drops off, you then swaps from 15% to 7.5%. So lots of stuff there. As a final category, just to wrap things up here, for the three categories, you can have basically everything else. That includes weapon perks, some exotics as well, anything that kind of applies to weapons that haven't already been covered would be under this category. And I will just quickly say that weapons that have double damage perks, we've seen with the Kingsfall raid, you can effectively get Vorpal Weapon and like Focused Fury or something like that. Those two stack together. They don't have any weirdness. You can stack those two effects with an Empowering buff and with a Global debuff. And they all start stacking up to give you these ridiculous damage values. So a lot going on there. But obviously I don't have this buried in my head. You can find all that great information over on my spreadsheets, which gives a nice sort of stacking guide overview of how things stack up with each other, and just give like at a glance version of, oh, can I use your Falcons with a radiant effect? And you can look at the graph there and see, okay, no, I can't. So a lot of information
there.
That's
fantastic. Yeah. No, I'll definitely recommend that everybody check out the damage stacking spreadsheet.
Do you have any questions related to that someone might have? Like, I suppose the important highlight here is to make that damage stacking is something that you should utilize, because it is the difference between, in PvE, it's the difference between one phasing or not.
Right.
It's the same with PvP. It's the difference between four or three or two tapping or not.
Right.
I know Ace of Spades is always brought up because you can proc Memento Mori. That's its own other damage effect. You can pair that with your Falcons, and I believe you can two tap. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Or Radiant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super, super strong.
So that's why. That's why you're getting two tap with the Ace of Spades.
Like, the big takeaway for me as somebody who primarily plays PvP a lot of the time is that I really need to get, and I have no doubt that I have been guilty of saying that things can stack when they can't stack in the past. You're shaking you're nodding your head. I can feel the disappointment.
Oh, that wasn't that was more of an acknowledgement, not an agreement.
Well, I've no doubt made this mistake at least once or twice on this show. It's tough to keep track of.
No, that's a very fair assessment. I still get questions from many members of the Destiny community, including content creators as well. People will just come up and ask me, can XYZ stack? And feel free to message me as well. You mentioned your DMs are always open. Mine are always open as well.
Yeah.
Because it is a very murky and convoluted topic, and it's not well explained in the game. You know, there's nothing that makes a distinction between what an empowering buff is and what isn't. And to be honest, empowering buff is something that's, I don't want to take full credit of coining the phrase empowering buff, but that is something that I wanted to make a distinction between. Previously, we were calling empowering buffs global buffs, which I don't think that's a helpful phrase, because that implies things like your abilities are getting buffed as well. I don't think that's a fair assessment to call things global buffs. But please feel free to message me if you're wanting more information, or you want to ask a question of, can these five damage perks stack with each other in PvP or PvE? Please do fire a message my way.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I would suggest, you know, anyone who's a little confused, I mean, first re-listen, second take a look at the sheet, and then third drop a message for clarification. You know, I'm always a big fan, you know, being somebody who's worked in tech for a long time, is, you know, always Google it first, but then don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, like, demonstrate that you are not coming in just completely empty-handed. But if something's not clear, you know, it's always good to ask a smart question or a dumb question once. But I think as a PvP player, the big takeaway for me is to learn the empowering buffs and, like, know those by heart. And I think what's happened as a result of this episode is that I now have a new additional project for my spreadsheet, for the weapon stats spreadsheet, specifically for the time to kill sheet. So I'm not interested in writing logic to calculate which buffs are which type for that sheet. It could be done. It is more work than it's worth to me. But what I will do is write some conditional formatting in to highlight when you've selected, you know, which type of buff. Is it a global debuff? Well, maybe we'll make it, you know, purple. You know, is it an empowering buff? Maybe we'll make it gold. And is it just a random buff? Well, maybe we'll make it blue. I don't know. I'm just saying these colors right now off the top of my head. But But yeah, I could absolutely add some color coding in for folks looking at PvP time to kill so that they know, oh, hey, these two are both the empowering color. They don't stack. I can't do that. You know, and so I think that's going to be a big takeaway here is I need to be more mindful that I'm not trying to stack Gerfalcons with high energy fire because it's not going to work. I do like to run those both just so I can have more damage buff uptime, but being mindful that I can't expect more than a 15% damage buff.
I think the main takeaway really here is that, yes, you can combo both of them. Don't expect them to both work at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, hunters are going to have Gerfalcon's damage effect up all the time, but when their invis is on cooldown and they have high energy fire being able to proc, then yeah, that will absolutely still work.
Right.
It will work in the background, and the 3 second invis timer might not be enough for some specific weapons, and if you have high energy fire in the background, it'll just back that up.
Yeah, you get a little more uptime. Same goes for, you know, if you're running Firewalker, if you're leaning hard into solar kills, you know, you can run the orb mods on your helm, and so you can then, you know, you can have that high energy fire up in the background to help you get into that Firewalker buff or to help pick it back up if you let it drop, you know. And so I think it's, there's a lot of room to just be kind of mindful of what is the gameplay loop as a PvP player that's actually going to work in the game and not what do I wish worked. All right, well, this has been super, super insightful, hitting some knowledge that is really easy to not think about in the Crucible, but that does make a big difference in kind of planning out a build and planning out what are the steps I take to get the most out of this build. So, Court, thank you so much for doing that. And just go ahead and remind folks, where can they find more from you?
Well, you can find me talking about stacking and various DPS meta over on Podcast Versus Enemies with my fellow Titan and Warlock, Saint Kabir and Impetus. You can also find me on Twitter as @CourtProjects. I post quite a lot of, you know, various graphs and kind of good to know information specifically related to damage stacking. That is a topic that I tend to revisit and just remind the masses. And of course, you can find me on the Massive Breakdowns Discord server as Court. And we've been talking about my damage stacking spreadsheet. I'm sure, Kit, you'll have it in the show notes. But
sure,
if you want to find that elsewhere, it's also up on the Massive Breakdowns website, amongst other great, valuable applications, spreadsheets, documents that will enhance your Destiny experience from various members of the community.
Yeah, there's a ton of folks doing some really interesting work. We're making spreadsheets do things they were never originally designed to do. And it's a ton of fun. So, you know, check that out. There's some great websites as well here, you know, not just spreadsheets. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on that list. But the damage stacking spreadsheet, I think, is one of those that, you know, especially prior to planning out a raid or Grandmaster is like a required reference. Like you got to know what will and won't work if you want to just absolutely like maximize your effectiveness. So, Court, again, thank you so much. I appreciate having you on. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of Destiny Massive Breakdowns. This has been episode 281. I've been your host, Kate Ketcha, my guest, Court. And you can find more Destiny Massive Breakdowns and Podcast Versus Enemies at destinymassivebreakdowns.com. You'll find links there to join us in Discord. Come hang out with Court, myself, and everyone else. You can find links to the official Twitter for Destiny Massive Breakdowns, links to all the podcasts. And don't forget as well to check us out on YouTube, Massive Breakdown Podcast. You will find all the shows now airing on YouTube. If that is your preferred listening platform, as I know it is for many of you out there, you don't have to have that podcast app installed anymore to hear us. You can just play it on YouTube and make it easy. So, all right, till next time. Peace.